Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 230, entitled How to Stop Panic Attacks, Anxiety, and Claustrophobia for Good, I chat with Tom Bunn. Tom Bunn is a licensed therapist, author, regular contributor to Psychology Today, and former U.S. Air Force captain who flew the Air Force's first supersonic jet fighter. In today's episode, Tom talks about his incredibly effective method for lowering anxiety, stopping panic attacks, and getting over the fear of claustrophobic places. Tom shares his unique perspective as a former Air Force pilot and later as an airline pilot who was able to help countless passengers fly without fear and how he developed a very effective approach for conquering your fears as well. If you're wondering how to use your mind to get past anxiety and panic attacks and remove any bit of claustrophobia you may have, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey, have you checked out our Elite Man YouTube channel yet? If not, get on it right now. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube and start watching our fantastic videos. We cover everything from dating, health, business, fitness, confidence, mindset, social skills, everything that you need to know to be a 21st century elite man, we've got you covered. We have a new video coming out every Monday and Friday, and I'm telling you, this is the number one place to get your elite man fix and the number one place to grow as a man. These videos will absolutely change your life and entertain you at the same time. I'm telling you, check these videos out right now. I have so much fun putting them together, and I know you're going to absolutely love them. elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube. Make sure you check it out right now and subscribe to our channel to get more of these fantastic videos and get notified the instant we release a new video. elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Tom Bunn from panicfree.net. Tom, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, man.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. What is it exactly that you do? Because I want to talk about your book in a couple of moments because it's fascinating. We cover this subject actually quite frequently on the podcast. Anxiety, panic attacks, even claustrophobia we've touched on a few times in the past. I want to dive into your new book, Panic Free, which is just a fascinating book. But what is it exactly that you do right now, Tom?
Well, I for years, I've been working with people who are afraid of flying. Initially, as a pilot, I figured you just need to know how safe flying is. That would be okay. But there's a lot of psychology involved. People don't necessarily like it when they have no control as a passenger and no escape. Same thing in elevators. You don't control it. Sometimes it stops and you can't get out. So it turns out that that's the main problem we have to deal with in a lot of places. It causes panic. And it took quite a while to find a way to stop panic in flight. But once we found it, we're able to stop it in at least 80% of the cases of people I was working with. And then a couple of years ago, I realized that CBT is the main therapy used for panic on the ground. And it wasn't doing a very good job. Only 17% of the people who are treated with CBT become panic-free. We were doing 80% in the air. So I figured, wait a minute, something's wrong here. So I figured I would take the same method that was working so beautifully in the air, very challenging situation, and apply it to being on the ground, which is much less challenging.
Cool. So you are a retired airline pilot. Did you have military experience before that?
Yeah, I flew in the Air Force, flew the F-100, the F-105, and then went to Pan Am and later to United Airlines.
And did you ever struggle with something like panic attacks or even anxiety yourself or claustrophobia, of course, while you were flying or before that period, which allowed you to then be a pilot and actually be the one in charge of flying the aircraft. Did you ever have any experience yourself with anxiety?
Well, no, not really. For years, when people would ask, did you ever have a panic attack? And I'd say no. But when I looked back at it, I remembered that when I first soloed in the Air Force, I was flying around getting ready to come back to land the airplane and suddenly had this feeling, wait a minute, you don't know how to land the plane. My instructor's been telling me that for several flights before he sent me up. And I had this feeling like, geez, you know, but I didn't have any option. I had to go ahead and land it anyway. So, yeah, it was kind of a panic attack in a way. But the thing was, I had to push through it anyway. So that's the closest thing I could tell you to it.
Yeah. And I know just when I was a kid, I had some fears around flying a lot. And then the more I did it, my mother actually was a stewardess, flight attendant. So she actually, back in the day too, I don't think so much anymore, but they used to give out like huge discounts. So we'd go all over the place. We'd go to, you know, the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, all kinds of islands. And I think Antigua was one of them, but like a bunch of cool islands, like every once in a while. And we'd stay there for a few days and it was really cool. But the more I did it, the more I flew, the less I had fear and anxiety surrounding that. But I know it is a huge fear for so many people. You mentioned a minute ago, when people actually realize how safe flying is, that can help as well. How safe, like what in terms of statistics, I'm sure you're familiar with that. Like how safe compared to like driving cars and some of the other things out there is actually flying?
Yeah, there's a guy at MIT who puts out statistics every year, updating things. You know, I think the easiest way to understand it is that in the major U.S. airlines, we haven't had a crash since 2001.
Wow.
And let me just go back to, you know, like I told you, I used to work for Pan Am. I went to Pan Am in 1965, and there wasn't a year in the U.S. when we didn't have a major U.S. airline have a crash. In fact, Pan Am usually had its own. And in the late 70s, we had a whole year when no U.S. carrier had a crash. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. Now we've had 17 years. So we're doing great. But that doesn't necessarily stop panic because, you see, when you're in a situation where you're not in control, you can start imagining something going wrong. And your imagination can kind of take over, and you believe that something's going wrong. And if you believe that you're in danger and you have no escape, that's when panic hits.
So what are some of these techniques that you talk about in the book? And by the way, I want to delve into the claustrophobia on an elevator because even now, I've learned how to get over my fears of elevators and things like that and like claustrophobic spaces. I actually did a hyperbaric oxygen therapy, a bunch of sessions in that before, which is pretty claustrophobic for most people. But even now, like if I get in an elevator, I still feel a little funny, like I don't like them. I'm curious myself to dive into that in a few moments and see what you've done in the process of getting over that for like the actual claustrophobia for people who get in elevators and, of course, airplanes. But diving more into the techniques that you talk about in the book first, what are some of the ways that actually work? Because you mentioned CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is actually incredibly ineffective for these types of things. What are some of the things that actually work?
What we're dealing with is our emotional control system, and we have two parts of it. One part revs us up, one part calms us down. And you can think of your car. You know, you accelerate a pedal, you push on that to go faster, you want to slow down, you hit the brakes. Now, the revving up system, that one works fine even at birth. As you know, any brand new baby can scream bloody murder. So that one's fine. That one's no problem. But what we want to do if you're getting too much arousal, too much revving up, one thing we can do is link a memory of a time when you produced a hormone called oxytocin to the situation that causes panic. The thing is that oxytocin, when we produce it, it makes it impossible to produce stress hormones. It shuts down the fear system. And you might think, well, wait a minute, this fear system is protecting us. So why would nature set up a way for it to be so easily shut down? It's for reproduction. Reproduction is also important in addition to survival. So, for example, when a mother nurses a child, it takes quite a while. What if halfway through she started thinking, gee, I got other things I need to do. Let's stop nursing and do those things. So nature protects the child's need for nourishment by all the time she's nursing, all the time the mother's nursing, she produces oxytocin, can't produce the stress hormones that would make her feel like she's got to do that other stuff. She can have the thought that she needs to do other things, but it doesn't get any power behind it. There's a second thing that oxytocin does in addition to shutting the fear system down. It causes bonding. So we can use a situation where it caused bonding for you and link that moment to the situation that's challenging. Here's one. When you pick up a newborn child, oxytocin is produced to make you feel protective of the child. And here's a fun one. Sexual orgasm. Men get a blast of oxytocin. You know what happens? We get very relaxed and we fall asleep and our partners get annoyed at us. But they might not get annoyed if they understood what nature's trying to do here. Here, just like the newborn blast of oxytocin to make you feel protective of the newborn, here, oxytocin is trying to get the guy to feel bonded to the female, so he's going to stick around in case there's a child that develops from this activity. With females, though, oxytocin is more likely to be produced in good sexual foreplay. And there's a couple of other situations. If you have a dog, if you interact with your dog, oxytocin is produced. Here, the dog is looking at you kind of like foreplay, like you're the only person in the world. I'm totally devoted to you. And then also an extended hug, maybe 20 or 30 seconds, you produce oxytocin. So technique-wise, you can pick any one of these or more than one of these. And then you go to the situation that causes your panic. Let's say it's an MRI. So the first step in getting an MRI is you got to call up and get a reservation. So what do? We imagine you have a photograph to make it a little bit easier to deal with, small black and white snapshot. So you know it's a canned situation, not something you're really going to do. So just looking at a photograph of someone making a phone call to get an appointment for an MRI. And you imagine that that's being held. Let's say if you're a guy, you're thinking about sexual afterglow is the moment to link to. So your lover's holding that picture by their face. Or if it's holding a baby, as you hold the baby, someone has that picture of calling for the MRI by their. Anyway, you get the point. We're going to link whatever you're going to be facing in the challenging situation to a time when you, because of what you were doing, shut down the ability to produce stress hormones. So then you go to the next step, getting in your car to go to the place where you're going to get the MRI. You link that up to the oxytocin-producing memory. And you continue checking in, going to a place there to change into a robe, going into the room where the machine is, lying down. The machine starts putting you, putting this mobile bed into the scanner. And first you're 10% of the way through, then 20%, then 30%, and so on. So we link up every step all the way in and out of the machine until you're back home to oxytocin production. So what happens is as you, having done those links, as you do that procedure, you keep getting this oxytocin production, keeps the fear system shut down. So that's the gas pedal. We block it, you see?
So when you talk about linking, are you talking about thinking of the memory, a good memory where you produced oxytocin in the past, say a sexual experience? Are you thinking of that in these different moments and you're creating the link in those moments, or are you doing most of this linking up beforehand and actually visualizing all these things happening?
It's all in the preparation.
Okay.
Because you see, you want to do the preparation ahead of time, establishing these links. And you, when you establish these links, they go into a part of the brain called unconscious procedural memory. You might say, what's that? Well, these days when you drive a car, you can have a conversation at the same time you're driving. Wasn't always that way. There was a time when it was challenging. But having driven quite a bit, now you can have a conversation with someone at the same time you're driving. Who's doing the driving here? That's your unconscious procedural memory, kind of your mental autopilot. So we want your mental autopilot to be taking care of you when you go into the MRI situation. Because when you get stressed, sometimes you're not able to do the stuff that you think you should do to take care of you. So we want it to work completely automatically.
Cool. So unconscious procedural memory sounds like subconscious memory. Same type of thing? Subconscious memory?
Well, yeah, it's in the subcortex, which is a part of the brain that's not available to conscious awareness. It's the kind of part of the brain that people use who work in an emergency room under life and death situations, or firefighters or policemen who do high stress things. Because when you get really stressed, you can't think clearly. So how do you perform? You perform based on your training. So the training's got to be repetitious. Let's say for a certain problem in an ER, you've got a procedure for that. And for a different problem, you've got a different procedure. You practice it hands-on so that when you're in that actual situation, your unconscious kicks in and takes care of it for you. Think about driving your car. Sometimes, you know, you get into concentration about something other than driving. You go right by your exit. So your unconscious procedural memory can do what it's trained to do, but it doesn't make decisions. It doesn't say, hey, wait a minute, you're supposed to get off this exit. It just keeps doing what you've been training to do.
Is there a way to mimic the environment? Like, say, I'm trying to think of, obviously, if you couldn't have like an elevator in your home or an airplane, but is there some other type of way to like simulate the type of environment that you're going to be in? Or maybe actually just go and sit on an airplane, you know, before it takes off and before like people are getting on, if you could somehow do that, like actually sit in the place that you're going to be and then go through it that way.
Well, I think you're headed toward desensitization. You know, when you do something and get used to it, then the amygdala doesn't produce stress hormones if you've gotten used to it. The reason we couldn't use that with flying is because to do the best kind of desensitization is you don't just jump in, sink, or swim. You do what's called systematic desensitization. You start at a very low exposure and slightly increase it slightly, so you don't notice the increases until finally you can be exposed to the full blast and it doesn't bother you. But the problem with flying is you're either flying or you're not, so you can't do this adjustment. So desensitization it's impossible to use for flying. Now, there's some things that, yeah, you might be able to use some desensitization for some of these things on the ground, but you don't have to. You just use a photograph of the situation. Link it to your lover's face or the baby's face or your dog's face, and that will prevent the release of stress hormones when you're actually in the situation.
So when you use the photograph, are you looking at a photograph of, say, an airplane, and then when you say linking it, you're visualizing whatever good thing that you want to link it to, or do you have also a photograph of that?
No, I would say that what you just do is you remember, let's say you remember a sexual afterglow moment, and you just bring it to mind and you just add one thing that certainly didn't happen. You just imagine your lover is holding a picture of let's say the door of the plane being closed, or the plane taking off, or the plane cruising, or in turbulence, or landing. So you want to link up all these things that could be a problem to your lover's face. Yeah. The other thing we do, now we talked about the shutting down the gas pedal, shutting down the release of stress hormones by using oxytocin and linking it up so that we keep producing it throughout the challenging experience. The other thing is the brake pedal. Now, that part, we all are born with the brake pedal. It's called the parasympathetic nervous system. But we don't have the software to make it operate on our own. There's software built in that lets us respond to our mother or another caregiver's face. That calms us. The software that we are born with lets us be calmed by the quality of a certain voice, or by touch. So when a baby gets upset, what happens intuitively? The caregiver, usually mom, talks to the baby. Baby doesn't understand those words, but the quality of the mom's voice has an effect. The mom's face has an effect. It's calming to see those soft, loving eyes, attentive. But touch, being held, rocked, touched, stroked, caressed, those things activate the calming system. So you know what's going to happen. The child is going to need this for a month, 2 months, 3 months, maybe even 18 months, until finally at about 18 months, the child is in a position to possibly develop software that lets the child activate what the mother's face, voice, and touch activates. How? When the child is upset and expects the mom to come and take care and calm him or her, the child imagines the mom's face, imagines that in a moment she'll be here. I'll see her. I'll hear her voice. She's going to hold me. She's going to, oh, I love the way it feels when she touches me. And what happens is this vivid imagination of mom taking care of you takes care of you. So when mom gets there, you're okay. So now you've started to build in the software that lets you take care of yourself. So after this happens a few times, you don't consciously know that you took these steps to calm yourself, but these steps do get built in so that when you get upset, you automatically calm down. It's kind of like your cell phone. When your cell phone rings, it makes a lot of noise to get your attention, but as soon as you answer it, it stops ringing so that you can have a conversation. So what we need from the parasympathetic nervous system is when the amygdala, the part of the brain that releases stress hormones, when it sees something that could be a problem, could be a danger, could be a threat, it gets your attention with stress hormones. For a moment, you feel alarmed. Now, people who have panic, they don't have this software that lets them calm down. They stay alarmed for a minute or 2 minutes until the stress hormones burn off. But most people have the software that as soon as they feel the alarm and say, oh, yeah, something's going on, they have this face, voice, and touch of the mom, which unconsciously, they've totally forgotten that that's what's doing it. But they have this face, voice, and touch built in unconscious procedural memory that calms them and lets them shift from being alarmed to just curious. I wonder what's going on. Which is a great help because you can much better figure what you need to do about a situation if you're calm than if you're really in a state of near panic.
Today's episode is sponsored by my friends over at Simple Habit, the creators of one of the coolest and most effective meditation apps I've ever used. You guys know I love meditation. I talk about it on the podcast all the time. I bring on guests who share different meditation practices, and I've used and tried so many different meditations myself. Every day, in fact, I meditate because, well, I just love it that much. I've tried dozens and dozens of apps, MP3s, and different programs in the past, but I've got to say, Simple Habit is right at the top of the list for favorite ways to meditate. Simple Habit has hundreds of meditations available for free and thousands with their premium subscription. And there's over 100 plus experts on these meditations, so you don't get tired or bored with hearing the same voice over and over again. And one of the things I love most about Simple Habit is that they have specific meditations for specific problems, such as getting over stress, focusing better, helping you go to sleep, kickstarting your morning, and so much more. It's not like so many other meditations that can quite frankly get old and tiresome really fast. Simple Habit has so many different things to do and keeps you very engaged and wanting to do more. Not to mention, they also have cool walking meditations, commuting meditations, work meditations, and even meditations for when you have to do the dishes. And did I mention many of these meditations are short and to the point, taking up only about 5 minutes of your time? Yep, Simple Habit is truly a game changer in the meditation space. For 30% off their premium subscription, go to simplehabit.com/elite right now and get started. But make sure you go right now, as this offer will be gone soon and is limited to the first 50 Elite Man listeners who act fast. That's simplehabit.com/elite.
Yeah, when you say this is the unconscious procedural memory is built in of that touch from infancy, from being born to about 18 months, people, you're saying all people have that in them, or most people anyways that don't have panic problems, they have that already wired inside them, that software?
Well, yes and no. You see, we've got the software for faces, voices, and touch, if they're benign, to calm us. Mm. This was something that was discovered by a neuroscientist, Stephen Porges, and he stumbled on it, actually. He was researching something else, and he found that the people he had hooked up to his equipment, when they would see a friend walk by, their heart rate would go down, their breathing rate would go down, and they'd get very relaxed. It was the signals that were coming unconsciously from their friend's face, voice, and touch. So what we now know is that's what activates the calming system. So we go back and say, well, that's what happens for the first few months of life. But 60% of us have someone respond to us consistently enough that we in sort of serendipitously develop the software for simply being revved up to calm us. Well, let me say here's what your listeners could do to develop this automatic calming for the next few days. First of all, let me ask you, do you have a friend who sometimes when you're with that person you feel your guard lets down?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So what happens when you feel your guard let down? A nerve called the vagus nerve just got stimulated totally unconsciously by signals coming from your friend's face, voice, and touch that you have nothing to fear from them. They're not a threat to you physically. They're not a threat to you even psychologically because they just accept you. They're not judging you in any way. When you get those signals, hey, you just totally relax. So what I'd like your listeners to do is to see if they can recall being with a person who where they felt their guard let down. If they don't remember that specifically, just think of a person that when you're with them, you feel like you don't need to be on guard at all. You feel like you can be totally yourself. You don't have to worry about what you say. You're totally accepted. Now, for the next few days, you want to train your mind. You want to train your unconscious procedural memory to automatically calm you. So every time you get uncalm, every time you get some stress hormones, anytime you feel a blast of anxiety or alarm or alertness hit you, before you do anything, imagine that your friend just walked into the room, says hello to you, comes over and gives you a hug. So you see what we're doing? We're saying every time you get revved up, calm yourself by intentionally bringing in those three things that activate the calming system. The face, the voice, and touch of a person who's completely safe to be with. After a few days, you'll do it a dozen or two times. It'll become software that works every time you start to get upset. You'll automatically get calmed down.
It's really interesting. What is this method called? Where did you discover it? What is it actually called?
Well, it's based on the SOAR program, the program I do with Fearful Flyers. That's where I discovered this, stumbled on it, because initially I was trying to use CBT to try to help people deal with panic on the plane. It just did not work. Tried to use breathing exercises. That did not work. So I was not the only person trying to find a way to stop panic on the planes. There was another therapist who came up with something called thought stopping, Jerry Lynn Ross. She came up with the idea, put a rubber band on your wrist. Every time you think an anxiety-producing thought, snap it. Cause yourself some pain. That'll inhibit the thought over a few repetitions. And I thought, yeah, okay, that makes sense, but I really don't like that self-inflicted pain idea. What about we just train a person to redirect their thoughts from anxiety-producing thoughts to something that's a positive thought, maybe some big deal that you've done in your life, winning a championship, getting an ace in tennis over somebody who's a really good competitor. Or, I tell you, I had a client who ran the New York Marathon, and so I said to her, I'm going to give you a hand signal, and when I do, I want you to go step, 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 and take yourself as fully as you can, back to running the marathon. So I'd say, okay, your plane's taxiing out. Give her the signal. She'd go to the marathon. Your plane's taking off. Give her the signal. And so we went through the whole flight, moment by moment of what happens on every flight. You know what happens. We took all those things and linked it. As soon as it came to mind, forget about it, go to the marathon. She did okay. But what happened that where I stumbled on this, a woman said, I'm going to link redirecting flying thoughts to memory of nursing my child. My thought was, you got to be kidding. You're going to get on the plane and think you're never going to see your child again. But I didn't say it, fortunately. She called back a week later, perfect flight. And I thought, well, that's strange. But that was it until it happened again and again. And then finally said, look, something is going on here. For some reason, when a mother links flying to nursing her child, it always works. The other things were hit or miss. This always works. Not only that, it works better than these other things that people were linking to. So turns out that was about the time that it had been discovered that when a mother nurses a child, she produces oxytocin, A, and B, oxytocin shuts down the fear system. So what we were doing, it wasn't thought redirection at all. It was linking flying to nursing, which produces oxytocin. And so it was the link between nursing, oxytocin-producing experience, and takeoff and landing and cruise and turbulence and so on. It was those links that, as the flight took place, the things that happened on the plane triggered the memory unconsciously of nursing, produced the oxytocin, kept the fear system shut down.
Is there any particular ones aside from the linking of nurturing, taking care of a child that are like some of the most powerful ones? You mentioned a few of the other ones, like the sexual experience. Are some of the other ones, is there any other ones like that that are like almost as good as the nurturing of a child?
Well, from what we know, the one that produces the most oxytocin is nursing a child. The big expert on this is Sue Carter. She says that when you produce oxytocin naturally, you probably are going to produce enough to keep your fear system shut down for about half an hour. But we're just using a memory, so I shoot for 5 minutes. Probably there's none of the other things will produce as much oxytocin as nursing, but they produce enough to do the job.
Okay. And so when you say you're trying to produce it for like 5 minutes, when you go back, when you're doing this beforehand, when you jump on a 6-hour flight from Boston to LA or something, maybe even be longer than that, like 7 or 8 hours. When you jump on a long flight like that and you go through these moments, say you've only done it for, half an hour beforehand and you were going through like a couple of the steps and you maybe missed a step or two, are you like screwed during the middle of that flight if you miss something?
Well, I wouldn't guarantee a person is going to do the job for them if they do this exercise just one time. If you're going to study a foreign language, you're probably going to put the words together in your mind half a dozen times to make them stick. Mm-hmm. You know, beer, cerveza, right? So it takes a while, but not very long. But once you've set these associations up, they're going to work for you. And, what I thought you might be going to is, hey, that's a long flight. How do you keep getting it every 5 minutes?
Yes, well, exactly. Yeah. I was going to get to that
point. Yeah. So let's look at it. Let's say you walk on the plane, you sit down in the seat, hook up your seatbelt. These are things you can link to. Door closes. The plane pushes back. Engine start. Taxi out. Take off. Noise abatement after takeoff. The flaps come up, you climb for about 20 minutes, then you start cruising. Now, here's the tricky part, cruise, because nothing's happening to link to. Okay, here's the way you work around that. When you get on the plane, as you're taxiing out, you got time to do this. Look at that tray table in front of you. It's rectangular, it's flat, kind of like your flat screen TV, right? So take that image. Let's say it's the image in your mind of looking at your lover after making love. And you put that face there on the tray table. You project it from your mind onto the tray table. Now, what you want to do is make it part of the tray table. So you need to hold it there for what? Maybe half a minute. So now that person is part of the tray table. That scene, sexual afterglow scene, is there. Okay, once you've got it there, then during the flight, once in a while, as you look around, the tray table is going to come in view. How could it not? It's right in front of you, maybe too close on most flights, right? So you're going to see that tray table. And when you do, it's going to jog your memory enough to connect with the sexual afterglow that you seen that you put there to produce some oxytocin to keep you supplied during cruise.
So you just continually think of that image over and over again?
No, you only need to do it when you're taxiing out for maybe half a minute. But then after that, you just whenever you happen to look up and see the tray table.
Okay.
So you don't have to intentionally do anything. See, what we're looking for is to make it possible for a person through the preparation to get on the plane and fly just like everybody else does. You don't have to do anything on the plane. Similarly, once you've done the preparation for the MRI, although you probably will think it's not going to work, you go there and you get into the MRI situation and you go through it. In fact, I just got an email from someone who said he didn't think it was going to work and it was a breeze. And the same thing is true with elevators or high places or bridges or tunnels. We just take the situation. We break it down into a number of steps. And if you can break it, at least want to get oxytocin every 5 minutes. But if you can break it down into more pieces, smaller pieces, that's fine too. And you want to link each one of those pieces to two things. A moment that produces oxytocin. We talked about those. Nursing a child, holding a newborn, sexual afterglow, good sexual chemistry and foreplay, interacting with a pet, and getting a long hug. And you want to link it to the other thing. The thing that, instead of shutting down the release of stress hormones, overrides the effect of stress hormones through the face, the voice, and the touch of a person who activates your calming system.
Yeah, this is, it's very simple. The technique is very simple, but it seems like it's very effective. And it reminds me, too, very much of NLP and some of the work of Dr. Richard Bandler.
Sure. Yeah, there's NLP uses anchoring, which connects things usually through touch. When you might I spent a year studying NLP, so sure, yeah, you could, for example, if you want a person to have a sequence of things to come to mind, you use first one knuckle and talk about that first thing you want them to remember, and then the next thing in the sequence, the next knuckle, and so on until you can touch the knuckles in sequence, and that sequence runs through their mind. Sure, you can do that. And there may be some ways that we could use NLP to accomplish this, but this one is really attached very basically to the activity, so you don't have to depend on anything artificial.
Yeah, there's no real anchors or things like that. You have to bring along or like think about all the time. It's just kind of just like one thing after another. It also reminds me too of the memory technique of linking, like in a palace. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
No, I don't know that one.
I think it was Harry Lorraine and basketball player Jerry something whatever in like the 70s. They came out with this, the memory book, I believe it's called, and it's basically like you walk into your home. Or like they consider it a palace, and you have like different pieces of furniture or different objects and things that you own, and you link out like these different, like say you want to remember the presidents like in order, you like go through and you can visualize all the different articles and objects in your home and attach that and link it to like a president, and you just like you go right down the order because you know where all the things are in your home, and you go right down and like link each president or whatever like that. New language, okay. words like that, just like going down and remembering it that way. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I've heard that some people who do the nightclub acts where they bring a dozen people up on stage and then they say, what's your name? And then they just walk by each one and says their name.
I've been
told that what they do is as the person says their name, they imagine writing their name on their forehead in magic marker. And then when they look at the person's face, they see the name written there.
Yeah.
But in any case, the links, however you, look, links are just Pavlovian psychology. It's over 100 years old. Mm. It's just association. So that's what we're doing. We're setting it up to associate the troublesome situation with oxytocin production that will shut down the fear system, link the troublesome situation with a memory that overrides stress hormones and calms you. And then the third thing, not just linking to situations, but the thing I mentioned your listeners can do, link it to arousal itself so that arousal will trigger calming.
Yeah, this is, it seems really, really effective. And you said up to 80% of people actually, there's a success rate of 80%. So what is it about? Yeah, go ahead.
That's what we were doing with the airplane, the way we do the course, which is people do a few hours of video and then I do a half hour counseling system, a session with them. And even with that relatively short course, we were running about 80% stopping panic. But if somebody's still having trouble with it, we can do a little more work. And I think we can bring it up to 100% with flying. But I mean, just the ordinary way we do it brings it up to 80. So the ordinary way a person would read the book, I think they're going to get at least 80%. And if they need some more help with it, then I can work with them personally. But I'm sure we can fix it in any case, because I just haven't run across a situation where I haven't been able to fix it in years.
That's incredible, man. That really is incredible. And I was basically going to say, what is it with the 20% that can't seem to figure it out after that point. It just seems like they need a little more work, a little more practice to really get those links and the visualizations down, right?
Yeah, well, sometimes it's a person says, okay, I'm going to link to lying on the beach because I'm really peaceful when I'm lying on the beach. That's comforting. I said, wait a minute, that's not going to work. The reason you're comfortable on the beach is there's nothing to bother you. What we want to do is to link you to something that will help you feel okay if there is something to bother you. Or they will say, well, I can't think of a person in my life where I've felt my guard let down. And then they say, okay, well, can you think of a person who's just easygoing? And, you know, oftentimes people will say, well, okay, my wife. And I say, well, look, I'm married too. I don't think that's going to work. So how about just an ordinary friend, just an ordinary person? They're often looking for a special person. And special people usually are kind of judgmental. They have high standards, or they might be judgmental. So I'm just looking for a person who's probably pretty easy to overlook and take for granted.
You know, you're not searching for somebody special and trying to really brainstorm it. It's just someone that's close to you, someone that can elicit those feelings and emotions, right?
Yeah, and you know, you're reminding me that just a few months ago at the University of Arizona, there was some interesting research. They had 102 people, I'm assuming they were students, who they put through this research program to test what could help a person calm down in a stressful situation. The stressful situation, what was it? Putting your foot, 1 foot, into 2 inches of 38 degree water. Doesn't sound terrible, but two people dropped out of the experiment. Couldn't handle it. Okay, so while your foot's in the water, they would have you hooked up to equipment to measure heart rate and breathing rate and other stress in measurements of stress. And they tried three different interventions. The first intervention they tried was when your foot is in the water, that's the stressor, think about what you did today. In other words, distract yourself from thinking about the water. Okay, so they checked how those people did. The second group, now, by the way, did I tell you? I don't think I told you. All of these people were in romantic relationships, committed relationships. Mm-hmm. So the second group, they said, when your foot's in the water, think about your girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever. So they measured their results. The third group, hey, they actually had their romantic partner physically present. Now, you can expect that that group would do pretty well, and they did. The thing that was amazing was the people who simply thought about their romantic partner did just as well.
Wow, that is incredible.
Very surprising, yeah.
That is awesome. That,
but it's just, you see, that's what we're using. We're using a memory of being with another person to give you the calming you need in an elevator, in a bridge, in a tunnel, high space, wherever it is that you could panic. Sure.
It just goes to show you how powerful the mind is and how incredible. I mean, I've talked about this too recently in the last few podcast episodes, and some of the work of Dr. Joe Dispenza and Bruce Lipton, and you know, some of these guys that are just proving over and over again that the power of the mind, visualization, the subconscious mind, it can be as real and tangible as actually doing things in real life. Like they've done studies where people like visualize playing the piano, and then they go and they can actually play it as good as someone who's been practicing for like the same amount of time for like a few months, and just different things like that, where it's like you just don't believe it's even possible for some of these things to be true. And then you find out that the science is actually proving more and more that what you're saying and what some of these other guys are saying is, you know, it's been true all along.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can train the mind amazingly well. And but at the same time you were saying that, I was thinking about, you're talking about how a person could visualize. You see, people get on the airplane and visualize the plane is falling out of the sky. They can do that pretty well, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the same thing with the placebo and the nocebo effect. And it just kind of reminded me of that, where, you know, doctor gives you a diagnosis and says you're going to be dead in 6 months. And 99% of the time, person's dead because they buy into that fact that they're going to die. Whereas if the doctor says, you know, you can have a great turnaround, we do this, this, and this, the chances are actually like 33% of the time, the placebo effect will actually work, where someone's given nothing, a sugar pill, and they can actually reverse whatever sickness or illness they have. It's incredible. Tom, I mean, this has been an incredible interview, man. Is there any last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience? And then, of course, a place that our listeners can check out your new book, Panic Free.
Well, yeah, I'd like to point out that it's not just about panic. It's also about claustrophobia, because if we can shut down the stress hormones are what give you the feeling you need to get the heck out of someplace. No stress hormones, no urge to escape, no claustrophobia. In any case, the website where the book is panicfree.net, or you can just go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and search there for Panic Free. You'll find the book there. It's also an audiobook and Kindle-type book. So you can – and it's not expensive at all, you know, $10-$15. And it can fix it. You know, it's, you know, I just get so annoyed when I think about how people are trying everything they can try to deal with panic and suffering from it. They think nothing will work. Yes, this will work, because what we're doing is we're tapping into the way that we're wired up and just changing a little bit the way we're wired up to keep from getting stress hormones in these situations and activate the calming system in these situations.
Awesome. I love it, Tom. Thank you again for coming on, man. Really do appreciate your time. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Justin.
Hey, are you following me on Instagram yet? If not, you are completely psychotic, but you do have a chance to redeem yourself. Go to Instagram right now and follow at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. That's right. That's my first and last name. And when you follow me, you'll get day-to-day updates on book recommendations, biohacking tools, elite man know-how, and all the glorious content I probably shouldn't post about, but do anyways. Whether pics of me trying to conquer the world in my personal life or stories about cutting-edge research and technology, I post all the time on Instagram. It's one of my favorite platforms, so you have to be following me to keep up to date on Elite Man Know-How. Get your daily dose of Elite Man entertainment and information Sunday through Saturday, Instagram at Justin Stenstrom. Also, you can always click the link in the show notes, which will take you to this link and all of the links that we mention here on the Elite Man Podcast. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.